You're listening to an edited version of the live Voices of Montana statewide radio program. You'll find us on Facebook, give us a like there, and subscribe for further podcasts wherever you get your audio on demand. I'm Tom Schultz, host of the program. Thanks for joining us, and please feel free to contact me at studio@voicesofmontana.com.
You know, there are things that, like, you just shake your head at, you take a double take, you go, what? What happened? What's the... Did you know that there's documented cases where COVID-19 viruses have been transmitted to humans, or from humans to cats, I should say, and to weasels? What does that mean? That means the virus that locked down our economy, I know, cure worse than the disease kind of stuff, could affect our wildlife populations. It's something we definitely have to look into, and we're doing that today. We'll also talk about an invasion of another sort, Asian clams, a lot of stuff on the plate. For our great Montana Outdoors today on Voices of Montana.
It's time for the fastest hour in radio from Montana for Montana Voices of Montana with Tom Schultz. Call in today at 866-627-5483 or text a comment or question to 781-627-5483. Now, a man who spent his holiday vacation cleaning his desk, it's Tom Schultz. It's National Clean Your Desk Day, by the way.
Clean my desk. That's a good one, Josh.
I saw a square foot of desk. It's there. I know it is.
Oh, gosh. Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Hey, I hope you're doing good. I hope you had a great weekend. Yeah, I know. It's Montana, right? You get this great Montana outdoors to hang out in or whatever it is that you want to do. You can pretty much do it around here. Thank you for being here as well. That objective perspective, 22 years. That's two decades strong. Working on three. Okay, enough about that. Tom Schultz alongside and... Today, yes, we're going to talk a little bit about some things that we need to catch up on here. And I know there's still fires smoldering over what happened in D.C. A lot of things that just leave me very frustrated. I know you as well. In full high gear, we've seen over the weekend this marginalization of conservative voices on by big tech censoring. I mean, it is in full gear. And we're going to talk about that this week. And if you've got things figured out, you let me know. All right. Because the rest of us, man, these times are crazy. And you're going to catch up on some other things today, all right? Because believe it or not, other things matter too. And talk about a crazy world being turned upside down. COVID-19, this virus, has been known to be transmitted from humans to cats and weasels, wildlife populations. I mean, how far does it go? We've got it with cats, which, what do they call, felids? And also mustelids, Bob will know this, which are known as weasels. There's the potential to transmit this into wild populations, and it's just something that you kind of shake your head on, you take a double take, your jaw drops maybe a little bit and go, whoa, that's probably not going to be real good. Bob Gibson joins us to talk about this and other things, chronic wasting disease, we always got to catch up on that. The invasion maybe of Asian clams, Lake Elmo, you know, they're going to drain the lake. That's one thing they can do there, but that's not what you can do in Tiber Reservoir. Bob's here, communication and education program manager with FWP for the state of Montana. How you doing, Bob?
Well, good morning. Doing great this morning. Sunny and bright.
I know. I can't believe it. What does an FWP guy think about winters with no snow?
Wow. You know, when it gets to be August and there's no water for the folks to float down the Bighorn or the Jefferson or the Madison, some of those places, it's a little little concerning. And our fish populations particularly are so dependent on water quality as well as water quantity. That if there's nothing to come down the stream in August, that's going to be tough. And then all of our wildlife species, of course, depend on having water. So good snowpack in the mountains, that's a good thing. Low snowpack, got to start scrambling a little bit.
What do you know about the snowpack right now?
Well, the snowpack in up along the High Line seems to be pretty good in western Montana. But, of course, in this part of the world, it's not as great as it could be. It's a little bit low, not in crisis mode yet, panic mode for water levels. But certainly the snowpacks that feed the Yellowstone, the Bighorn, the Musselshell are, got to start keeping an eye on them. They're moderately dry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, And people know that. I mean, we appreciate the warmer weather. I think there's plenty of time. I would say plenty of time to catch up. And I know I've talked to a lot of folks, and they're going, they're expecting it. They're expecting huge blasts of snow. But you never know. So, we'll keep an eye on it, too, and hope for the best in that regard. I know the skiers are a little bit tired of this, too. Bob, thank you again for being here. I want to talk right off the bat about this recent release I saw. Like I said, it kind of made my jaw drop, do a double take here. The fact that you guys have documented, or at least there has been documented, the transmittal of COVID-19, this virus, into cats and weasels. Let's start right there, because, you know, that's something that we just need a ton of information about.
Well, certainly COVID is easily transmittable. We know that because it's gone from person to person, to the point that we're wearing masks and staying two arm lengths away from people and things like that in the human population. And now it has been documented in some wild cats and wild weasels, or wild mustelids in, not here in Montana. Nothing has shown up here at all. I believe one of the cases at least is in Utah, and that's a little concerning, because we certainly know that there's, millions of folks now in the United States that have suffered from the disease, and we certainly don't want that moving into wildlife populations. So the release that I saw and the information that I've seen in the technical stuff that's come across is that, yes, apparently, COVID-19, the virus that causes COVID-19 can be spread to that wildlife. Now, does that mean, don't go up into the sagebrush flats where you know there's a bobcat coming by in the next couple of days and sneeze? No, not at all. This is close contact things, much the same as COVID-19 has spread among humans. So the technical bulletins are saying, if you're handling live wild mustelids or live wild cats, just do the same things you would do if you're talking with your friends. That's put a mask on, keep your hands clean, keep some distance. Is it a huge concern? Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a concern, but keep in mind that these are folks that are handling live wild animals. So trappers that are trapping, and if they catch a bobcat or if they catch a weasel and then turn it loose, that's close contact. If you're a researcher that is catching live wild cats and live wild weasels and, putting collars on them or taking their temperature or checking them out or whatever, then that's the person that we're talking to. The average person on the street may never in a whole lifetime come in anywhere close to close contact with those wild animals, and so don't need to worry about it. But certainly the technical folks are talking to the people who handle live wild animals for a living or for part of what they do, and asking them to take those precautions.
And we'll talk about the possible reintroduction of martens, which is a weasel, into the Little Belt Mountains. That's going to affect this here. But I want to stay on this a little bit because we can probably manage, because, as you say, there's not a lot of human-to-wildlife contact in this regard, but, we can't manage the wildlife-to-wildlife contact. How good is the science so far, and what are these ramifications going forward if we open up this huge Pandora box?
Well, the ramifications going forward are that, yes, COVID-19 could affect wildlife populations. If you're a trapper, you trap a weasel. That's not a weasel that you want. You let it go, and it has contracted COVID-19. And it goes out, then weasels and wildcats don't know about social distancing and masks, and they don't care, and they don't care about close contact and washing their hands and those things. So it easily could spread from cat to cat or weasel to weasel and affect those populations. Now, how that's going to affect things or whether it's going to affect populations, certainly don't know that. All they know is that by testing some captive wildcats and captive wild weasels that are live, that they were able to confirm that those animals did have the coronavirus virus that causes COVID-19 in humans.
So do they get sick? I mean, what's the fatality rate? I know there's a lot. I suppose the real question is, how much are we now looking into this?
Well, the folks that are handling those animals are looking into it heavily. Of course, we have disease experts and the fur bearer experts, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks in Montana that have got their antennas up and are looking at everything they can and making sure that, one, we don't do something that causes COVID-19 or the coronavirus to show up in wild animals in Montana, but certainly to know enough about it that we know what it is. And so those folks are watching very carefully and know a lot more about it than most of us and know a lot more of the high-end scientific end of it than most of us will even ever need to know. So we're watching it closely and certainly watching to see if there are any precautions. I think it's new enough right now that really don't know what yeah. the rate of infection is in wild cats. If you catch a wild cat in your trap and you don't want to keep that wild cat and you turn it loose, and even if it contracts the coronavirus, how quickly does it spread? How many of animals will get it? What the consequences are? Do they get sick and die? Do they get asymptomatic and run around?
Yeah.
I think a lot of that is not known yet because it's so new.
And nothing's really rung a real huge bell regarding it outside of the fact that we've seen this. So a lot more is going to have to go into it. What's the Trapping Association said about it? I know some trappers. I did some trapping in my time as well. I know that they're going to be afraid that environmental groups are going to use this to try and further eradicate this legal activity, trapping across Montana. What do they say early on?
Well, that's the political part of it,
right.
Not the science part of it. So Fish, Wildlife, and Parks' role in this whole thing is just to make sure that trappers, researchers, biologists, even the NGO or the non-government groups, the nonprofits that may have some contact with wild animals and have licenses to do that, that they know that there is this possibility and to know that they need to act the same as they would if they were around a crowd of people at Thanksgiving and to take precautions that would keep Montana from spreading the coronavirus to our wild animals. So the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks' role there is to make sure that the trapping groups are educated and that the folks who handle wild animals are educated, and hopefully that'll keep it out of Montana. Now, what the no trapping groups have to say about that, again, that's the political end of it. We're the science end of it.
Yeah, and that may be somewhat predictable, too. Hey, we'll come on back because I think this needs to be, well, it's associated. There's a proposal out there and maybe even efforts begun to restore the marten populations in the Little Belt of Mountains. We'll have to talk about that. They are a member of the weasel family. Lots more to cover here, too. Bob Gibson is with us. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks are great outdoors here on Voices of Montana. Boy, as I look down this list, a lot of things to catch up on here with our Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Department for the state of Montana. Bob Gibson is with us, Communication and Education Program Manager, Chronic Wasting Disease. There's been some hunts. I think there are some areas still open until January 15th or maybe sold. Those licenses are sold. It looks like they might areas be open until February 15th. We'll catch up on these chronic wasting disease hunts in Montana. Also want to talk about Lake Elmo, as they're going to drain this lake and get rid of some Asian clams, but that's not the case. That's a nice management tool, but that's not something you can do in a lot of areas. So we'll have Bob Gibson kind of more have more on that here in just a bit. Bob, thank you for being here. Appreciate that. Stand by, Pat. Pat, let's just go with your question. Pat, listening in Helena on KCAP 950 AM. Appreciate you. As always, you're on the air with Bob Gibson.
Thank you. I heard in the past couple of months that Denmark had an invasion or infection or CWD among the mink and the mink farms, and they had to destroy all of their mink. And so I was wondering if, Mr. Gibson, does Montana have fur farms where we are raising fur for export, probably, where we need to keep an eye on what's going on there with the captive animals? We've had a problem with the captive elk, which the CWD, I guess, came out of that and got into our wild deer. And so what are we doing to keep an eye on any fur farms that we may have in the state? I think there's one out near Miles City, but I'm not sure.
And you're referring to COVID-19 in these...
Yes, the COVID-19 showed up in Denmark, and they had to destroy all of the mink.
Okay. Bob, what do you know?
Well, I don't know a lot about Denmark, but I do know that Montana does have some folks that raise animals for furs. I don't know where they export them to or anything like that, but certainly those are among the folks that need to be educated about what to look for in wild animals, or in that case, it would be captive animals that may have the novel coronavirus in them. How to keep it from spreading there. Would we have to, does that mean do we have to destroy any of our fur raisers right now? No, certainly not. There's no reason to believe right now that the coronavirus is in any of the fur farms or any of the cages where folks raise furs in Montana. But we want to keep it from getting here. It's like we're trying to keep CWD away from Montana as much as we can, and other diseases that come and go. So that's an education thing for the folks that do that. It's certainly a place that everybody will keep an eye on, because you're right. It gets started in a mink fur farm someplace, and you get one of those guys that gets out, then it could spread to the wild populations, which is not what we want. There is a history of disease getting into captive herds and in bunches of animals in Montana where the whole herd had to be destroyed. Certainly brucellosis is a concern, chronic wasting disease is a concern, and now, thank you, 2020, we have the novel coronavirus that is a concern as well, and FWP will continue to watch that in the captive farms as well as in our wild populations.
Pat, thank you for your call. It's 866-621 5483, 866-627-5483, and 781-627-5483 if you want to give us a text message here. You got something for Bob's plate. I appreciate that, Bob. You know, the thing that I really want to try to avoid here is this whole hysteria over COVID-19. We've seen maybe some of that, maybe too much of it. Others would contend that that's the case, and others are saying we're not taking enough concern over that. But I appreciate we're talking about the science behind this and really trying to get some answers out about it. Chronic wasting disease, and we'll get back to the Martins here and the restoration in just a little bit, but since we're on that topic, where are we at right now? I know we've got some hunts planned and in specific areas. You want to detail that for us?
Well, the hunts that are continuing right now are in those mountains, in those hills right east of Dillon. Those hunting districts there. This year, this fall, for the first time, chronic wasting disease was seen there, and that came from hunter-harvested animals. And as you know, this fall, anybody that harvested a deer, an elk, or a moose in Montana was encouraged to have it tested before they ran it to the butcher shop or whether they put it in the kitchen counter and cut it up for the freezer, so that they would know whether the deer that they harvested or the elk had chronic wasting disease or had been exposed to chronic wasting disease. And that's exactly what happened. Some folks did that, and when their deer came up from the lab as positive for chronic wasting disease, they went back and said, okay, where did you harvest it? And then we knew at that time that for the first time in our history, it was starting to show up over in that country east of Dillon. So now the scientists that are trying to get around ahead of chronic wasting disease want to know, like, what is the prevalence? What percentage of the deer in that area and those hunting districts have been exposed to chronic wasting disease or have chronic wasting disease? They need a representative sampling of deer from that area so that they can get a good idea. If you can, if you test two deer from a hunting district and one of them has chronic wasting disease, does that mean that half of the deer there?
Right.
No. Statistically, that's not valid statistically. But if there are 600 deer that come back, now we're starting to get closer and closer and closer to being able to have a statistically valid guess at what the percentage of animals are in that hunting district that may have been exposed. And so there weren't enough animals that came out of there during the general hunting season. So the department decided to have a special hunt and allow people to go back in there and harvest more deer so that there is a statistically valid way to decide how big there are.
Hang on a second. We're going to continue this. Bob, I got some headlines to get out there. Chris has got a question, and I don't mean to cut you off, but this is very important. It's vital to us. So we'll talk more about chronic wasting disease. First, though, let's grab some headlines from Brian Bennett.
Montana's drought status map continues to show the southeastern Montana counties of Powder River and Carter is severely dry, along with Roosevelt and Sheridan counties in the northeast. 17 other counties are rated moderately dry, including around Yellowstone, Gallatin, and Richland counties. In anticipation of a new round of Paycheck Protection Program assistance rolling out this week, the Small Business Administration has taken steps to ensure these relief programs get into the hands of business owners who were unable to access the PPP loan in 2020. Today, the SBA will grant exclusive access to first-time PPP borrowers. Wednesday, the program will open to second-time PPP applicants. Montana reported 353 COVID-19 cases and the COVID-19 deaths of two more people Sunday in an update to the state's case mapping and information website. COVID-19 has caused the deaths of a total of 1,056 people in Montana. With Montana News Headlines, I'm Brian Bennett.
We will get to eradicating invasive clams. One method in southeastern Montana is probably not a method that's going to work along the High Line. Bob Gibson is with us. We'll talk about that here in just a bit. First, back with more on chronic wasting diseases. We have just a couple of minutes here. Chris, thank you for joining us on KOFI 1180 AM and 104.3 FM in the Flathead. Appreciate that. You're on the air with Bob Gibson.
Yeah, Bob, I'm a cause and effect guy. So when I look at something like chronic wasting disease, which has been around sporadically all over the country, so way back. So, I mean, when you really look at it and you say, well, what are the causes here? What are the things that you've added up in the fish and wildlife and parks? Craig sure has a good opportunity here now, and I'd like to see him put an administration that's in there with the boots on the ground to really try to do it, because Tom, you already started the hysteria by putting this forward. You see, I mean,
I know,
it's good to be, it's good to know things and see where it's going. But the fishing game for many years, under the Pittman Robinson Act and the Wallop Bro Act, these things were beautiful. And when I moved in here in the '70s, it used to be two deer seasons. And everybody knows, and all of the experts know, that when deer start to pile up and congregate, and especially in the winter, they have green yards where these deer congregate. And this year is a fairly mild winter in a way. We're going to have more population. Go back to the two deer season, will you? And just start allowing, you know, hunters to go out there and hunt the doe in a buck as well.
It would
probably maybe help this chronic wasting disease. We got too many deer, especially in the valley here. You can come out, I'll take you around. You'll see lots of deer, does and bucks. So, I mean, these things have to be dealt with. You must have some facts on the deer population and the elk population. And I'm against raising wild game. Keep them wild. Don't let people start. I'm just against that.
All right, Chris, good stuff. I appreciate that. We're up against this break. It's a hard break at 35. Got to get to it. Bob Gibson, thank you. I know you're going to have some information regarding that, and so we'll get to that here. Important discussion as a chronic wasting disease. And do we need more than just one hunting season? Are we managing our populations? Back with more from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
The fastest hour in Montana radio continues. Call 1-866-627-5483 and join Montana's statewide radio talk show, Voices of Montana, with Tom Schultz.
More on chronic wasting disease here in just a bit. Tomorrow's program, Protecting or Targeting Family Values. That's often on the legislative agenda. Jeff Laslofi of the Montana Family Foundation is going to join us Tuesday. He's going to discuss legislation that the organization would either support or oppose. You know, and that's not only at the state level, but it happens at the local level and certainly happens at the national level. So that is upcoming tomorrow, Wednesday. My friend Leslie Robinson is going to join us. She's a rancher from Phillips County, former Phillips County Commissioner, Lieutenant Governor, candidate, state director for Greg Gianforte's congressional office, and the first woman elected as an officer of the Montana Stock Growers Association, kind of in line to be the first female director of that program, of that association. So she's going to be on. We'll also have Joe Dooling on the program on Wednesday, and other things to come here. Quick message, if resident hunters aren't doing enough to cull the wildlife population, perhaps the state should lower the cost of licenses for non-resident hunters. 781-627-5483. That off the text message. Our guest is Bob Gibson, who can handle all this and more. He is the Communication and Education Program Manager with FWP. Chris had some good points, Bob, and this text message as well about the management of our wildlife populations. And we see how important these tools are when we have, and I wouldn't call it a crisis yet, but we're very concerned about chronic wasting disease. Some comments to finish up on Chris's thoughts about an additional season or other management tools.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Chris is absolutely right that as the deer bunch up and you get the 100 whitetails standing around under somebody's pivot, that's the recipe for spreading chronic wasting disease. And part of the idea behind some of these hunts that are going on until February 15th now is to get those deer spread out a little bit and to thin those herds down a little bit so that spread is less likely. Part of the problem is, and Tom suggested that maybe we just let everybody harvest two deer, which if you want to buy the licenses now, I believe you can harvest up to seven if you go to the right places and right times and the right species and licensing, et cetera. But it doesn't matter. We could let everybody harvest 30 deer if that would work. Unfortunately, if those deer are standing around under somebody's pivot or in somebody's front yard or in the neighborhood, they're inaccessible to hunters and just not going to be able to hunt them. And that is the biggest concern with chronic wasting disease, is inaccessible herds that are behind orange fence posts or locked up or in people's yards in town, and you can't get to them. So just adding hunting licenses or adding numbers of folks that can go harvest deer is at this point not being considered as strongly as a solution to chronic wasting disease, because don't believe that will be the end all of chronic wasting disease.
Gotcha. It's a tool, but it's one tool in a tool belt that maybe we need more tools in. Let's take another quick call here, listening on KGHL, the Mighty 790, and I believe from Sheridan, Wyoming. Thank you, Sean. You're on the air. We've got Bob Gibson here on Voices of Montana.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much. I'm actually, I live in Billings. I'm from the Sheridan, Montana area.
Oh, I got you. Thank you.
Where the whitetail CWD hunt is currently taking place. And my concern is that it's not easy enough to get the whitetail tested. I mean, you have two testing facilities, Bob, and one's in Dillon and one's in Butte, and yet they're in completely different counties from where the hunt is actually taking place. After calling up over to Bozeman, I found out that the lymph nodes are sent from these two areas that are, you know, where the testing takes place is actually in Bozeman, but you can get the lymph nodes from the deer taken, but in Bozeman or in Butte and or Dillon. And I just feel like I think you would get a lot more hunters if you had more testing facilities or testing places available.
Good point. Do we need more resources there, Bob? Would that help in the fight?
Well, certainly I think that resources would be fine. In this case, the number of animals that are tested and the places where they're tested are sort of aimed at the places where people live rather than putting them up in the hunting district where people are hunting. And that way, as people bring those deer out, they can have them tested. We're encouraging people to extract those lymph nodes and get them into Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for testing themselves rather than having to haul them to a station. And there's it's relatively easy. There's good instructions on the website, or a call to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks will get you instructions on how to do that and to get those in. High percentage or a good percentage of the folks who had their deer tested during the general season this year extracted them themselves in the field and got them to us and got their test results back.
Is that what you did, Sean?
No, I haven't had. I did not harvest a deer this season, but I looked into that. I just didn't feel safe enough to know whether I properly had the correct lymph node, and I'd hate to have to bank on my. I'd rather have a professional do it, I guess, if you will, than have to bank on my knowledge on having to do that. Yes, I know there's some wonderful videos out there on how to. But I would just feel safer if somebody professionally was doing it.
Yeah, I get that. Bob, you know, if we have to continue fighting this battle like we are, would there be a proposal to put these sites, so to speak, in along the High Line in northeastern Montana or in southeastern Montana? I know the Libby area has been another area of concern, and it seems like we're seeing more and more areas of concern.
When there are, we've got the general season going on, and we've got a high volume, a high flow of those samples coming through. That has actually happened in Region 5. I mean, every corner of the state had a place where you could take your deer fairly close. And I mean, what I mean by fairly close is not in your neighborhood, but certainly if you were in Laurel or Joliet, you could bring that deer to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks in Billings or along the High Line. In all corners of the state, certainly up around Libby and Kalispell, we had places that during normal business hours and a lot of times even into the evening and on weekends that people could stop and bring their animals, their harvested animals in and have a technician here or a biologist or a game warden that would extract those lymph nodes. Takes about a minute or two. They're very good at it here. But even those folks that were harvesting that were taking out the lymph nodes themselves and getting them in really had very few problems. Even as long as you knew how to run a cell phone and a hunt and a sharp knife, there wasn't that big a problem with people getting the right thing if they just kind of followed the video and looked at it. Even if you watched the video once while you were at home before you went out, it's a fairly simple process and didn't have people doing it wrong. But during the general season, when there was a high flow of animals, those services were available. Right now, there's a small enough number of folks hunting in a limited enough place in Montana that it wouldn't do us really any good to have those check stations where folks could have lymph nodes removed, you know, at Kalispell or along the High Line or in Billings even now, because maybe one or two people from Billings, maybe a half dozen people from Billings are going over there and participating in that hunt. But having a station open here full time for them to bring those back, and we just have some technicians that would be waiting for sure.
Good to see that people are concerned, calling in. I mean, that chronic wasting disease is top of mind for our Montana hunters. Bob Gibson is with us. Robert Gibson, the Communication and Education Program Manager with FWP. Going to hit the Asian clam eradication plan for Lake Elmo, because the plan there is to drain the lake. I know that's kind of specific to southeastern Montana or south central Montana, however you want to feel the Billings area is. And then, as I mentioned, Martin Restoration in the Little Belt. So there's a couple of things that we're going to get to here after this break. Thank you all. We are back with more. It's 866-627-5483 or 781-627-5483 on the text message. It's from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. As I mentioned, looking forward to tomorrow, protecting or targeting family values at the state legislature, also at the local and national level. And then Wednesday, Leslie Robinson from Phillips County will join us here as an officer of the Montana Stock Growers Association. Joe Dooling is going to be on the program as well. He wrote an interesting article regarding the compact recently signed at the Congress, the Water Compact. So we'll have more on that here on Wednesday. Bob Gibson with the FWP with us here. Bob, I'm interested in this Martin Restoration, Little Belt Mountains. I think what's interesting about it is it's not a national thing because Martins are going to be pretty limited. So you're just trying to get these back into this area called the Little Belt Mountains. And you've got historic precedents where it worked pretty well in the Big Belt Mountains.
Yeah, certainly. And the Little Belt Mountains, if you go and look at them and if you look at them from a biological sense, are like extremely good, perfect habitat for pine martens. And they've been there in the past, but they were extirpated either through trapping or habitat or a number of other reasons, poisoning when people were trying to get rid of things like coyotes and skunks. But so they were extirpated. But and martens don't migrate a long way, so they've got to go very far across places that there isn't good habitat, they just won't go. And so they were able to repopulate themselves back into the Little Belt Mountains from either the Big Belt Mountains or any of the other ranges. So Fish, Wildlife, and Parks decided that it needed to get some of those animals from some of the places that martens are doing really well and get them into the Little Belt Mountains. That's part of the duties of Fish, Wildlife, and Park, and part of our what we're supposed to be doing is working to sustain and work with those natural or native species, and martens are one of those. So there's a program going on, a lot of cooperation going on among groups to get some martens out of some of the surrounding mountains and get them back into the Little Belts. I think they've got a dozen or so up there now, and they're still working with it. Certainly the Trapper Association is helping with that. They're doing live trapping of those animals and then turning them over to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. And Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is arranging to get them health checked. You know, they check the gender of them. They check the all of the things that they need to know about them and turn them loose into the mountains, in the Little Belt Mountains. And it seems to be that they're doing pretty good.
What's important for people to know about this plan to drain Lake Elmo? I think that's about 60 acres. I don't really have it in front of me here. To eradicate the Asian clams, as we had kind of talked about earlier on, it's not the same thing that you can do in other areas, but what's top of mind as Communication and Education Program Manager for the public on this process?
Well, the process of draining the lake is to eliminate the Asian clams. They were discovered in 2019 in the lake, and we don't want them to get into the irrigation systems and work their way down into the Yellowstone River, et cetera. Mm. And the science says that the easiest way to get rid of Asian clams is to freeze them, dry them up, and starve them, and to do that you have to drain the lake and then and then leave it for the winter, and there's no water, there's no food, there's no anything in that In theory, at least, the science says that that'll eliminate all of the Asian clams that are in the lake. And that's all well and fine. We're planning to do that starting in September in Lake Elmo. It's about 60 acres, you know, so 12, 16, maybe at the deepest spot, 12 feet, 8 feet deep. And that while that's going to, and that's going to be a huge project to drain 60 acres and do that. But you can't do that elsewhere in the state. This is a 60 acre lake. You can't go up to Tiber where mussels were found a few years back, or to Canyon Ferry where they're suspected of doing it. You can't drain that lake. That it's too big. There's just no way you could do it. Too many users. All of to get rid of them. So the lesson here is to be really, really cautious about how you clean, drain, and dry your equipment and your boats, etc., so that we don't accidentally drag clams or mussels or any of the invasive plants, even from water body to water body in Montana. Nice to be able to do it in Billings and drain a lake of 60 acres and get rid of that one invasive species. But certainly nobody should think that, well, if we get them elsewhere, we'll just drain in those lakes too.
I got a text message here. How do you drain a lake?
Well, there's a big cork in the bottom, and you just lift it up. And no, that's of course that's just being. But
that's
like
good.
That,
that's know? Good. Did your speech writers have to write that for you, or was that all on your own?
Really? So you drain it the same way that you know, this is an irrigation reservoir. Rather, we call it Lake Elmo, but it's an irrigation reservoir, and they've got a head gate at the end, and that goes out into some canals and laterals that then irrigate. Farm fields and lawns downstream, and a lot of it can be done that way. Some of it also may have to be pumped out and put back into the Billings Bench Water Association ditch after there's no more water in there. So that water will run down the ditch a little way. If somebody wants to pull that out and put it out on their farm field, that's fine.
Sounds like a process. And great to have you joining us again, Bob. We're going to check in with you on a frequent basis. Bob Gibson, be well. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers, and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.